Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to this fourth edition on the Social Suplex Podcast Network of Meet the Press Slam. And I am delighted to be joined by one of the brethren of the Social Suplex Podcast Network. I think I should be transferred to being called the young boy because I'm 26 and this guy's 34. So, Josh Youngboy Smith, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to do this. I think I'm the first member of the Social Suplex Podcasting Network that's actually been on the show, right?
Yes, you are.
Okay, cool. Because
I had Rich on for a Cody breaking news audio, but that's on Meet the Press Slam. But
okay. So saving the best for first. So
yeah, we always bury Caleb.
Fuck Caleb. No, but thanks for having me on. And yeah, funny thing. So years ago, before I was like a regular podcaster, I had joined a couple episodes with Rich and James of One Nation Radio where like I literally had no idea what I was doing. I'd never recorded audio, but I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I had like a gimmick? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so my initial idea was I'm the gentleman Joshua Smith, like gentleman Chris Adams, you know, with, you know, the fucking like jacket, and the British thing and everything like that. But I felt like I did so bad on the first couple like episodes we ever did. We're talking like almost a decade ago where I was like, bro, that was terrible. Like, I don't even deserve to have a gimmick anymore. You guys should just call me the young boy. And like, Rich was like, huh, I kind of like that. It's kind of smooth, you know, like, you know, taking all context aside, you know, the young boy. Then later on, years later, we ended up doing the New Japan podcast and like the young boy thing had already like sort of stuck. So that's kind of the origination of why, you know, even at 34 years old, I'm still referred to as the young boy, Josh Smith.
Yes, that's fantastic storytelling there. So I used to call into a podcast called The Wrestling Soup. Back in, when was it? Like 2010, when I was like 14 years old. I went under the moniker WWE versus TNA. I was edgy even back then. God.
You were booking like dream shows between the two of them, like, you know, Undertaker versus Abyss and shit like that.
I don't even know what I was doing, man. I would call in. They would play Oombop. It was just insanity back then, but it was all
fun. I'll tell you what, fun. Being on the message boards back then, like in like 2005, you couldn't tell me that there wouldn't have been a greater match in the world than AJ Styles and Shawn Michaels in like 05. That was like my like dum-dum-dum-dum, like my heartbeat, like hair raising type of like I always wanted to see that match. It was like my dream.
Yeah, and we might get it, but we might not.
Yeah, if they throw enough Saudi money, you never know.
Boots again. But when did you become a wrestling fan?
Yeah, so I guess that's the reason we're here recording the show. So my history of wrestling, it's kind of interesting. Growing up, I actually don't have any memories before I was a wrestling fan.
Wow.
You know, so like my earliest memories, I was born in 1988, and my family were diehard wrestling fans, grew up in the Detroit area. So, I mean, like, you know, my dad, his family, they'd seen like The Sheik and Bobo Brazil and, you know, big time wrestling, everything from Detroit, everything like that. And then we were in the area where during the territories, we were getting television from, you know, both WWF as well as like Crockett. So my family was kind of like watching both, and they saw like a lot of the like Madison Square Garden, you know, house shows and stuff like that. And then funny enough, the first wrestling show I attended was a show where I wasn't even born yet, technically speaking. My mom was pregnant with me at Cobo Arena the night that not Terry Garvin, not Jimmy Garvin. Oh, what's his name? Who?
Ronnie Garvin.
The night Ronnie Garvin came off the top rope in the steel cage match against Ric Flair and beat him for the NWA title, my family was there, and you know, my mom was pregnant with me. So technically, that's the first show I ever like attended. But
you're destined for this shit.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is, like, I wouldn't call it destined. I think I was programmed, because like my dad, my brother, they both watched it, and then like my grandfather on my mom's side, you know, they're Puerto Rican and Mexican, so like he was sending me like tapes from like CMLL and AAA and like Lucha Libre and stuff like that, like in the mail. So I didn't even know really what it was, but I was watching like a lot of that, plus like sometimes he would send me like the original Glow, you know. Yeah, you actually can watch that. They show Glow on
Pluto,
yeah. And I've gone back and watched some of it. It's hilarious. Like, that stuff's if you're like, you know,
it's a trip.
Yeah, if you're in an altered mind state, that's some of the best wrestling you can watch. But no, I had some of that growing up.
That too for a lot of people.
But my earliest memories were like Hulk Hogan. That was like, you know, he's racist and terrible human being, but like growing up, that was like my ultimate like hero. The first wrestling toy I remember was like a Hulk Hogan shampoo bottle where his head was like the cap would screw off, and I remember like having that and playing with that. But the thing that influenced me the most, and the reason that like I'm a diehard wrestling fan, my family had bought I don't know where, probably at the video store, they bought the Turner Classic Home Video Starcade Best of 1983 to 1987. And so like I like, you know, some kid, I think most kids kind of like have that phase where they find something that they really like and they watch it every day, you know. Like for my sister, it was like Beauty and the Beast. She watched that like every day, and lots of kids have stuff like that. Well, for me, it was like Ric Flair versus Harley Race in the cage. Every day I was watching like Starcade.
You were raised on the good stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, that was like a really rare tape, and I didn't know that people didn't see this stuff, you know. Like I assumed most wrestling fans were very familiar with, you know, the Crockett territory and everything like that, and I didn't know.
Oh, you would be sadly mistaken.
Yeah, I had no idea. But like, yeah, growing up, Piper and Valentine in the
ball collar.
In the dog collar match, you know, Night of the Skywalkers, the freaking what's it called? The scaffold match.
Oh, it's scaffold. Yes, I thought you were going to say Black Scorpion.
No. Dusty and Ric Flair, you know, at the 84 and the 85.
Was Tully like, Magnum on that tape?
Tully Magnum is on that tape, and like I actually have a Tully Magnum shirt, and I was out with my dad recently, and I was like, look at my shirt. And he's like, oh, man, that match is incredible. It's so vicious. And I'm like, dude, why'd you let me watch that at like 3 and like 2 years old? Like, I was watching that daily. Like, that's kind of fucked up if you think about it. Like, it's one like grown man stabbing another dude in the face with a wooden spike. Like, it's not what little kids should be watching, but I was. So that's kind of like
human being now.
I try to be, but that's kind of what really influenced me. And then, you know, growing up watching WCW and watching WWF, and then just my family influences, like, I was obsessed with it, like, still am and always have been. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, how I started as a wrestling fan, really.
How did you get into the Japanese stuff? That's the main goal, since you are now the co-host of Keeping It Strong Style on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. The Japanese stuff is a big influence on you now.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of twofold. I mean, I think some of my early, like, exposures to Japanese wrestling were probably a lot of the, like, WCW crossover stuff. So, you know, when they would bring in Muda, when they'd bring in Liger, and
Fujinami,
you know, to a lesser degree, yeah, guys like Fujinami and Chono and all that. But, like, they would show the clips. It wasn't just that they were coming over, but it was, like, when they would show those vignettes, and you would see them in the Tokyo Dome on the blue mat with, you know, even the turnbuckles just looking different, because they didn't have, like, the turnbuckle pads, but they had, like, the boxing pads. And I'm like, whoa, that's so weird over there. Like, what's going, you know, and I wanted to, like, find out more about what that actually was. I had no idea. So that was, like, the first, you know, kind of introduction, plus a lot of the video games, especially, like, in the later 90s, like, WCW versus the World for PlayStation, you know, playing that game, I had no idea until much later that all those, you know, characters were actually Japanese wrestlers, you know?
This is the second time on this show we've been mentioning WCW versus the World, and it was a flagship topic.
Yeah. I mean, like, that game, you know, there were guys on there, I was like, oh, they got a guy that looks like Baba. But then I was like, later I'm like, oh, it just flat out was Baba, and, you know, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, that was part of it. But the big exposure, the one thing that really exposed me, my brother was a martial artist and, you know, very into MMA, you know. And so, like, in the early, like, 90s / like mid 90s, he was trying to get his hands on any kind of, like, major tournament, like, sort of footage that existed out there. And there was, like, a lot of proto MMA. And what we ended up, like, through tape trading, we ended up, like, getting exposed to, like, early, like, Shudo, Pancrase, UWF, Dang. UWFI. And, like, we'd watch it. We're, like, we couldn't tell what, you know, is, like, we're, like, some of this is, you know, this ring stuff is a little different than this stuff. And, like, we ended up, like, watching a lot of MMA, but we also ended up watching what we didn't realize at the time was pro wrestling. We thought a lot of it was, like, actual fighting, but we're like, that's weird. Sometimes they're doing pins, sometimes they're not, but, you know, and it wasn't always clearly labeled. So we didn't know where this stuff was coming from, but he would just send away for it and, like, trade. And that was, like, a lot of my early exposure to pro wrestling. And I didn't even realize I was watching it. I thought I was watching, like, real martial arts, which I guess technically it kind of was, but that's sort of the beginning for me. And then the coup de grace that really sealed it, aside from just the internet coming along and making things accessible, was Mick Foley and the IWA King of the Deathmatch 95 tournament. I didn't see that till much later, but seeing that on, like, WWF and seeing the footage of him going into the C4 and the time boards and, you know, the razor wire and everything like that, I was like, holy fuck, like, I gotta find that. And then when the internet came along, actually getting into that. So, like, the two things for me was, like, the deathmatch stuff, the shoot style, and then obviously eventually I found Jacob. And once you start seeing Liger and
Jacob, it's done.
Yeah, it's over. And, you know, seeing Ghetto and Taka and Eddie and, you know, Jericho, Ray, Hoovy, all those guys over there doing this incredible stuff, that's sort of, like, what really sinked it in for me. And then, you know, at some point, I think once I became, like, more aware of wrestling ratings and things like that from like message boards. And I learned who Dave Meltzer was. And I was like, oh, there's this guy. He like rates matches. And then I was like, oh, there's this guy named Mizawa who's got more great matches than anyone ever. I need to find this stuff. So then that brought me into like All Japan, you know, and I was probably watching it 6, 7, 8 years later after it occurred. Like Noah's already happening, but I'm like just starting to watch All Japan. You know what I mean?
I had that search when he died. So
yeah,
I had that search. Like I was like, Misawa died. I hear about it on the internet, of course, because I was 13 years old. I was on the internet. Internet's accessible at this point. I was torrenting indie shows at this point.
Mm.
And I'm like, who the hell is this Misawa guy, and why is he the greatest wrestler of all time?
Yeah. It's actually funny. On the first episode of One Nation Radio I did, this is like 2013, so like literally almost a decade ago. On the show, someone from the group went back and listened to it. And on the show, I was like, I kind of like Japanese wrestling, but I'm not like that into it. And then they like brought it up. They're like, yeah, you said you weren't that into Japanese wrestling. And I was like, yeah, but you have to understand, man. I was on the Death Valley Driver video review boards like at that time. And so me saying that I'm not that into it meant like I was watching it all the time. But compared to like the old head dudes that were on there that knew everything, I was nothing. And I didn't realize at that time, first time going on a podcast, A, I was nervous. B, I didn't know who I was dealing with. Like, I didn't even know Rich and James that well at the time. And so I'm like, they might know way more about this than I do. So I'm not going to claim to be an expert on it. Even though looking back, I'm like, I probably could have talked, you know, at length about the Pillars and about the history of Japanese wrestling and, you know, Ricky Dozan and all that shit. Like,
so it's funny when you first do a podcast. And I first did my podcast in 2014, called Get in the Ring. And it was a chat. It evolved from this guy from a show called The Chat Down, which my original co-host wanted to cover WWE only. And I was relenting against it because I was like, there's this big boom in Japan. There's this big boom in Japan. There's this big boom in Japan. Yeah. I was just screaming it from the rants. So I said, I'm just going to do an hour beforehand. Before the Chat Down, called Get in the Ring, and just lay waste on everything else that's happening in the world of wrestling. And
nice.
I ended up being right. me.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I think you're absolutely right. Like around that time, there was definitely a boom. I had like. Around that time, even kind of fallen out a bit with watching Japanese wrestling, just because like it wasn't that easily accessible, you know. I think for a few years there with like Enokiism 2, and then
the Ustream era, yeah.
Yeah, that was sort of like
it was.
You know, I thought it was kind of cool. Era.
It was Jamal Hepburn, or God rest his soul,
and yeah,
putting in the work. On
yeah, those real heroes guys, you couldn't find anything except for through them. And yeah.
That, you know, that Japanese wrestling group was everything.
I think the three things that like had kind of crashed around, relatively speaking, was like, you know, All Japan sort of like losing their TV deal, Noah kind of losing with after the death of Misawa starting to go downhill, and then Enokiism, like. And then just the hard entry barrier of entry to even watch the Japanese wrestling. I'd kind of like fallen out a bit around that time, but I was hearing good things about New Japan. So like by the time Wrestle Kingdom 9 comes around, that's where I was like, okay, like, and I was still watching like some of the big matches, but I was like, Right. Maybe I should like get back into this because it seems like with this new streaming service, they're going to make it like more accessible. And so that's sort of what wrangled me. Back what happened? It, you know?
Look, we were right. We were right. We were right, and it would lead to the second biggest American promotion, the most successful American promotion in modern history. So, I'm just saying, this revolution is something not to be antiquated.
Yeah,
this revolution of newsletter readers, this revolution of people who know their crap. Yeah. I think AEW and New Japan are, and they're going to sell out the United Center, and people are going to be flabbergasted.
Yeah, I would love to be at that show. I'm still thinking about it. I found, I was looking at like tickets and they were kind of insane, but now I found an affordable ticket, but then all the other costs and expenses like lodging, travel, food, even just like, I don't know I don't want to peel back the barrier too much. We have an inside guy who like, was able to get us a suite, but like even the suite tickets, I was like, damn. So, you know, I don't want to spend a G to go watch a show that I can like stay home and watch, you know, spend $50 on to watch. So,
but the environment there is what will be incredible.
I'm sure it will be. I was in Chicago for All In 2019, and that was to this date the greatest wrestling environment I've ever been a part of. So, I'm definitely jealous. I think they've done a really smart thing there, picking Chicago for this show, because even right now with like air flights like surging, they don't need a flying crowd to sell this show out, provided that they have Punk on top, because they're in Chicago. You know, just the draw of New Japan AEW is going to be a huge thing. That market's so hot, and if Punk's on top and he's wrestling, you know, an Okada or Tanahashi or something like that, it's going to sell out. So that was kind of smart on their part to do it there.
Yeah, it is very smart. And, you know, I just think people underestimating this thing, this movement is so insane. People underestimating everything that has come in the last few years. Like, oh, it's not going to get bigger. Oh, it's gotten bigger. Oh, yeah, they're not going to do this rating. Oh, they did.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely. I mean, I'm definitely a fan of, like, AEW. I wouldn't say that I'm not. I watch it every week on Wednesday. But, you know, I'm just glad that there is an alternative that's out there that exists for the, you know, I know that the term casual fan is sort of thrown about, but, like, for just regular people that want to watch wrestling on TV, they don't want to, like, download a streaming service or like go on to Daily Motion. There's just regular ass wrestling that they can turn on TV.
Yep.
It's there. Tony Khan's done that. So, you know, good on them. I'm glad that that exists. And generally speaking, I mean,
everything's not for me either, but I'm like, I'm
right.
Damn well exists because.
Well, you know, my wheelhouse isn't just Japanese wrestling. A lot of like my wrestling fandom kind of revolves around classic, you know, especially like 80s wrestling. So, I mean, the more you kind of know about that era, the more you see the fingerprint of it all over AEW. What's old is new again. Most of the storylines are kind of old, you know, Mid-South and, you know, Crockett and, you know, fucking Tennessee and Memphis storylines, stuff from Portland and shit like that. Yeah, a lot of continental shit, and which is smart because not everybody knows that that's what they're doing. But you know, hey, Mid-South fucking ruled. They've taken like 10 storylines from them and applied it. I love it.
Yeah, Bill Watts was actually pretty smart. And wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
You know what's funny?
Shout out.
People hate the Bill Watts WCW era, but that's probably my favorite era of the company, to be honest.
Honestly, that might be my favorite era of the company. Like the 91-92 WCW.
92 WCW rules. Like, it does. There's a lot of misses, but I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like, I love all that stuff from that time period, like Sting and Dragon and Dangerous Alliance and you know, Miracle Violence connections there. The Steiners are there. 1992 is awesome.
Yeah, it really is awesome. It really is awesome, man. I just feel very much appreciated for everything that it is, you know? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
God.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
That's sort of like the story of all this. It's just like, just keep on going. You know, you just got to keep on going. But What are some of your favorite matches?
Oh man. Favorite matches. I could go on all day about matches. Like, man, I don't even know. Joe versus Kobashi from Ring of Honor. That's got to be one of them. The Fantastics versus Midnight Express series, especially the one for the worldwide match with the double heat. That one's incredible. Right. Magnum and Tully, Piper Valentine, that stuff stands out to me. The entire Okada Omega series. Yeah. Once we start getting into New Japan, I mean, it's over. Like, there's so many matches that I love. I mean, Tanahashi and Okada, Ibushi Tanahashi from the G1 Finals is like one of the most emotional matches of all time.
Ibushi Nakamura.
You know, I love Ibushi Nakamura. I'm not as high on that match as it. Like, I recognize how great it is, and I'm not even going to sit here and say it's not like a 5-star classic, but. If I was talking about my favorites, it's not one of my favorites. I don't like go back and rewatch it the same way everyone else does. You know what I mean? Like, from that night, I like the Tanahashi Okada match better.
Yeah, I like the Tanahashi Okada match, but I like their G1 match better. The Ibushi Nakamura.
Ibushi Nakamura. Yeah, that the Ibushi Nakamura G1 match is incredible. And that might be the better match, but it doesn't get the same kind of like roses thrown at it. You know what I mean? There's a lot. You know what's a funny match that I love that like I shouldn't love it, but I love Nick Aldis versus Cody from All In. That's a match that like I recognize how flawed it is, but like being there live and hearing the crowd reaction, I just fucking love that match. For whatever reason, I don't know. Yeah, and I mean, there's so many other matches. I mean, Kobashi, Mizawa. I don't even know. All the Hashimoto versus Tenryu matches. Like, I could just go on for days and days. Like, you know, it's weird to even, like, think about that question because I'm just like, I'm, like, trying to go through the catalog of you know.
Great matches.
Austin and Sean, or I'm sorry, Austin and Brett.
Austin Sean's pretty good too.
Austin Sean's good too. You know that the King of the Ring match that ends in a DQ, I think, is actually almost better, except for the worst finish. You know, and obviously not the same stage, but like from an in-ring perspective. Yeah, man. I mean, oh, and I mean Flair, all the Flair Steamboat matches. Geez, like there's just so many. You know, like there's a lot of incredible wrestling that exists out there.
Yeah, it's so much. And there's a great podcast that delves into great wrestling on this podcast network called Great Match Generator, hosted by yours truly and Adam Eury. But
yeah, I love what you guys do. You know, like, it's very like eclectic, just the wide range of stuff that you guys cover. You know what I mean? I mean, on one episode, you might get something from like Perezu and then like 90s indie and then like a shoot style match. It's weird.
Yeah. We had too much shoot style in like a 3-week span. Like, we're so sick of shoot style.
Oh, I fucking love it. I love it. I love shoot wrestling. Like, Akira Maeda put that into my veins. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Mr. Terminus Truther.
I hate Terminus. I would love for Terminus to be good. Like, I thought that Terminus was going to basically be a new age joint promotions type of, you know, or even
like, and it's not.
And it's not even anything close to. Oh, yeah. A few years ago, I got really big into British like shoot style or British world sport like style wrestling and. You know, I love that stuff.
We are watching we're watching Jim Breaks versus John Cortez on our next episode.
Dude, John Cortez might be the greatest wrestler that nobody talks about. I mean, he's incredible. There's some really good John Cortez match. John Cortez versus Steve Gray and John Hayward. Those matches, like, Steve Gray's my favorite British style wrestler. He's like just this little spry escape style wrestler. He's incredible. Rollerball Rocco, Johnny Saint, all those guys. Like, I fucking love British style
wrestling. Are you a big daddy fan?
No, I can't say that I am. I don't like any Shirley Crabtree matches. I've never seen a good one that you know, on tape ever.
So you're not for him for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame?
No, I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he's a slam dunk, and the fact that he's not in there is extremely egregious.
But you're like, he's a bad wrestler, but he deserves to be in the Hall.
Yeah, I mean, going into the Hall of Fame isn't all based on technical acumen.
Hulk Hogan's in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, I think Hulk Hogan's a great worker, so.
hey, yeah, true. Watch that probably, great Muda match. Tell me he's not a great worker.
Yeah, I could probably give you like 15 matches of Hulk Hogan's that I think are very good. Now, do I think he's like an all-time great worker? No, not at all. But, you know, I think he is a very, very good wrestler. I always have thought that.
Yeah, I think Hulk Hogan's good. I was just joking about that.
No. You know, and it's fine. There's people, he's not to their taste. You know, I don't find myself these days watching a lot of Hulk Hogan, considering everything that's gone down. But, you know, I mean, there was a time prior to the racist allegations where, like, I was working on an article. I never ended up printing it, but, like, I pretty much compiled, like, a list of what I consider to be, like, Hulk Hogan's best matches year by year from, like, 80 up until like the end of his, you know, run. And like almost every year he's in something that is worthwhile. Good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
He wanted to turn it on. He could, even in WCW, he still had the ability to do that.
Yeah. True. Also, I think who else would categorize as an underrated, but fun wrestler to look at?
Well, I mean, it depends, you know, because I mean, like, a lot of the names that qualify, I think are names that have kind of been lost to time, or maybe are famous in their region, but aren't necessarily remembered so well by modern wrestling fans. You know, like, for instance, for me, like, I think one of the greatest luchadors that's ever lived, El Dandy. And I know, like,
yes.
The only joke about El Dandy is the Bret Hart joke. Like, who are you to question El Dandy? But, like, what's funny about that shit is, like, in the 80s and in the early 90s, that was, like, a real thing. Like, who would you be to question El Dandy? The guy could high fly. The guy could chain grapple. The guy could brawl with the best of them. He could bleed. He was a fantastic heel. He could get sympathy.
Right.
he was good at every single aspect of pro wrestling on an extremely high level. Now, like, I think his peak is short-lived. I think it's only, like, 3 or 4 years. But, like, at the peak of El Dandy's, like, heights and prowesses, like, fuck, I think he's one of the greatest wrestlers ever. And no one else does.
Yeah, that's a great example, actually. Everyone thinks Negro Casas is great, too. Negro Casas is so great at everything.
He's incredible. I even remember back in, like, I mean, this is a while back, but, like, in 2016, I just randomly caught a CMLL, you know, show that was just airing on, I think, like, Televisa. And it was a 2-on-3 falls match. It was him and some young cat. And, like, he was just still as good as he ever was. And I'm like, God, like, you know, he's not that far off in age from, like, Ric Flair. Ric Flair, like, had the longevity of some of the greatest. But, like, even he can't go on the level that, like, Negro Casas is still wrestling at a super high level right now.
Yeah, bruh.
It's bizarre.
It's Sting, too. Sting. Oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's funny is, like, Sting's almost kind of regenerated. There was, like, a time period where, like, Sting was not really great. And it, like, I think Sting in 2022 is better than, like, Sting in 2014.
That is funny. Yeah, it is. Because they, no,
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's so weird how that is, you know. So weird. Well, I'm trying to think of any other questions I would have.
Hey, the time's yours. You can ask away, man. I'm here. I'm at your disposal.
Let's talk one of your favorite heels of all time. Some of your favorite heels.
Well, I mean, obviously Ric Flair. Like almost in every iteration of his career. I mean, I think he's like the consummate professional heel. I mean, I remember literally times where growing up in a very like religious home and also not being fully smartened up, like only halfway smartened up to what was going on. Not just understanding how Hulk Hogan couldn't beat the Four Horsemen, you know, right. And literally like praying to God, like, God, please, like, let Hulk Hogan come back and beat these dudes, because, you know, I couldn't understand how they were getting away with all this cheating, and they put Arne Anderson over Hulk Hogan on fucking Nitro. Like, like, how is this possible? But, yeah, I mean, you look at everything from, like, Flair's run in the 80s and stuff he did with Ricky Morton and, you know, Dusty and everybody like that. I mean, it's just some of the best, like, television that there's ever been. One of the greatest heel promos of all time. The feud with Macho Man in 92 is something that shouldn't have worked, but still did work.
Right.
They tried really hard to like give Flair bullshit the entire time that he was in his run in WWF, and he took chicken shit and turned it into turned it into chicken salad. Like he was incredible. Big fan of Nick Bockwinkel. I love his promos, completely different style than Flair, but like kind of a similar deal. You know, just the fact that like he's the best in the world. He's unapproachable in terms of like his technical acumen, and he beats everybody because he's the best. And you know, him and Bobby Heenan together, like Bobby Heenan to me is like probably one of, if not the greatest heel manager that's out there. I fucking love that combination. Vader, one of my favorite guys for different reasons. I love the combination of him and Harley Race.
Oh, yes, that was so good.
Him just being terrifying, you know, and just running roughshod over, you know, the WCW locker room. And, you know, pretty much the funny thing is, like, you look at Vince, and I know I'm going a little off topic, but you look at, like, how many guys that he received from the outside that were huge stars and made money everywhere else, and then they come to WWF, and he does so much less with them than what he could have. You know, Legion of Doom, Steiner Brothers, they stick out in my mind. Ric Flair is another one. But Vader is probably, like, the most glaring example. Because, I mean, there's nowhere that – I mean, look at where he went. Everywhere he went, whether it was Germany, whether it was Japan, you know,
Mexico,
whether that Mexico, and then, you know, WCW, and every single time they had some sort of like incredible babyface that he came in and he fucked up, he destroyed, and then he runs, he goes on a monster run, and then eventually that babyface, whether it was Sting or whether it was Otto Vons or whether it was Inoki or whether it was Kinect, it doesn't matter who it was, they eventually beat him back, and then they draw some of the biggest business that their company has ever done. And the only time that didn't work was in WWF when it was Shawn, and they go the totally opposite way and job him out in the first big match. And it's just crazy. But like, yeah, I mean, those guys stick out to me. CM Punk as a heel.
Yeah.
Is Danielson as a heel.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm going to give you a name of a couple guys. And I have this 2001 PWI Almanac.
Sure.
I'm going to give you a couple names from the 2000 PWI 500.
Okay.
And you just tell me your initial thoughts on them.
Okay.
I'm going to give you an easy one. Kensuke Sasaki.
Underrated. You know, maybe overpushed at the same time, but, you know, ass kicker. Love him.
El Hijo del Santo. He was number 15. Oh, man.
Yeah, I love El Hijo del Santo. I don't think he gets all the flowers that are deserved to him, but him and La Parca has, like, some of my favorite, like, bloody feud matches of all time. So, yeah, big fan.
Yuji Nagata.
Oh, man. Yuji's just one of the best, even to this day. I fucking love Yuji Nagata. I really wish they wouldn't have put him in those MMA fights with Fedor and Crow Cop back in the day. But other than those missteps, I mean, Nagata's just, he's one of the greatest ever.
Edge.
Overrated. A tag team guy.
Thumbs up.
No, you know what? I actually, let me take that back. I like Edge. Prior to this return, almost everything he did, I think Edge was actually one of the best heels in WWF history, and a fantastic wrestler. But I've not been a fan of almost anything he's done since he came back.
Blue Panther.
That's Blue Panther Senior.
Blue Panther, the more famous one.
Okay, yeah, Blue Panther. You know, funny thing, I haven't seen too much tape of Blue Panther, but I mean. You know,
yeah, obviously had that match of the year contender with Viano 3 in 2000. The mascara,
who? No, that's Atlantis.
Atlantis Viano 3. Oh yeah,
yeah.
Got those two tripped up. But Blue Panther is awesome.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen that much Blue Panther, but I've definitely seen the Atlantis Viano 3 match, which is one of the most emotional. You know, mask versus mask matches of all time. Incredible.
Brian Christopher.
You know, Grandmaster 2XA.
Christopher Daniels.
The Fallen Angel, the godfather of indie wrestling, one of the greats.
Yeah. I'll do two more. I'll do Great Sasuke.
A fucking insane wild man who will do anything to, you know, entertain. Just incredible.
And then one of the greatest Japanese wrestlers of all time, Tenryu Genichiro.
Yeah. Genichiro. I love Tenryu. I think he's one of the greatest workers, and I'm not just talking about in-ring. I'm talking about in all aspects of life. Tenryu never loses.
Who are the three people that never lose? Tenryu, Jeff Jarrett, and Ric Flair. Those three people never lose.
I don't know about all that, but like every time I hear people talk about Jeff Jarrett never loses, I just think Tenryu never loses. Tenryu always comes out on top. And yeah, I love Tenryu. One of the stiffest strikers that there ever were. You know, just his fingerprints are all over Japanese pro wrestling. I mean, so much of what I love about pro wrestling is influenced by Tenryu. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love Tenryu. He's one of my favorite characters in Japanese wrestling history?
I think he may be, and I could be wrong on this, but I feel pretty certain he's one of the only people to have ever beaten both Inoki and Baba clean.
That's a hell of an accomplishment. And he's faced Okada.
Oh, yeah. Even yeah, even that.
In his last match. He's like, dude, I'm going to put over the king on the last match, man.
Yeah, that match, you know, it's good. It's interesting. I mean,
you know what? I'd rather than it has any right here in 2017.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I was like, I give zero fucks. I was like, Tenryu and Okada, it was a powerbomb symphony, and I give zero fucks because Tenryu is what he means to wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally understand that. I mean, I think a lot of people felt the same way with Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels in OA at WrestleMania. I don't think that this match was quite as good as that, but
it's not as good, but I was like, I don't care. I give zero fucks. Tenryu is Tenryu. As you say, Tenryu wins in all facets.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I mean, dude, look at it. Like, look at what happened with, you know, when the whole split was going to happen and it seemed like he was going to play second fiddle in All Japan. I'm just going to get a money mark over here, start Super World Sport. Oh, that's going under. It's not going to work out. All right, well, I'm just going to
form war.
And, you know, basically become the biggest super indie in all of Japan and form alliances with, you know, UWFI and New Japan and get, you know, all these benefits. And not only that, but get wins over all the top stars from both companies. And, you know, oh, you want me to do a... You want me to do an FMW, you know, exploding death wire, you know, death match with Onita? Okay, I'm not going to go into any of the death, you know, I'm not going to take any actual bumps, but we'll do it. We'll draw money. Onita's going to take all the bumps. And then,
you know, and I right win now, because I'm Tenryu.
And then, you know, and then after all that, it's like, okay, well, things aren't looking so great. Oh, you need me to come in and save All Japan, you know, years after the fact when, you know, Baba swore I would never be able to work there again. Okay. Oh, you want me to come in and be the Triple Crown champion, you know, a decade later? Sure, I'll do that.
Yeah, Tenryu. Mic drop.
You want me to go back to New Japan and win the IWGP title? Okay. Like, this guy never loses.
I think we all learned a valuable lesson today. Tenryu never loses. I think on that note, we should end on Tenryu never loses.
Yeah, it's true. Thanks for having me on the show here, Danny.
Plugs.
Guys, yeah, you can find my show. So right after this, I'm going to be recording this week's episode of Keeping Strong Style. We are the longest running episodic Strictly New Japan podcast on the internet today. We've been going since late 2017. I cannot remember. It's been a long time, but you can find us here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. We drop every single Tuesday and we cover everything within the realm and the universe of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So in-depth analysis, insight, you know, match breakdowns, previews, reviews, we cover all of it. And there's a lot of good coverage of New Japan out there, but I guarantee you, you won't find better than Keeping a Strong Style. You can find us on Twitter. Our handle is at KI Strong Style. You can find us on any streaming service that's out there. If you want to interact with us on Reddit, my co-host Jeremy Donovan, he is the Pro Black Guy. I am Keeping It Strong Style. You can also connect with us on Facebook. We host a group called the Wrestling Square Circle. So if you subscribe there, group. You can also interact with us there. And we have a Discord channel. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to interact with the Social Splits Podcast Network. But again, my name is Joshua Smith, and I am pretty much just the talent. Jeremy handles almost all the, you know, all of our Twitter, all of our social media. I just kind of show up and talk shit and then go home.
And Tenryu never loses. And I am DJ D Kooks on Twitter. Great Match Pod for the Great Match Generator podcast on the social there. And then, that's pretty much it for me. So thank you for joining me, Josh.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.